This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I'm sick with this. I'm sick with it. Since you went to the bottom, blood judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told. Very nice to have you for this special part two of my talk with Cove Reber, formerly of Seosin. And part one was so great. And the feedback has been amazing. People are really exciting. People are hounding me for this part two. So I'm going to keep the intro short because I know you want to get to it. I don't want you to hit the little 15-second skip forward button. I want you to listen to this. So since last week, when I scolded everyone for not giving to CalFund.org, we have had a really nice uptick in donations. It's not too late to donate. Head over to calfund.org, send us an email to sinnersforgood@gmail.com. That's S-Y-N-N-E-R-S, the number 4, G-O-O-D @gmail.com. Send us that with proof of your donation, and you can be enrolled for some perks. These are the people who have very generously donated to helping the people who have been victims of the California wildfires. Zachary Weissenberger, Brian Ossip, Heather Michaud, Melissa Gilroy, Rebecca Ferrero, Andy Bagley, Caroline Kerouac, Anthony Stewart, Brendan Potter, Tanya Kopchewski, Chelsea Rubino, Brandon Dave, Stuart Gunn, Tyler Peterson, Markham King, Travis Gwynn, Jeffrey Lindstrom, Brandon Drescher, Christian, Andy, Neil Anglin, Stephanie, Brooke Barker, Patrick Schmitz, Deanna Godone, Daniel Bonet, and Ian Scott. Thank you, everyone, so much. It's not too late. Head over to calfund.org right now. As I'm recording this, I am in Chicago. We are playing at the House of Blues tomorrow. It's going to be a great show. I think there might be a couple tickets left. So if you're listening to this from Chicago, head over. We're playing Tuesday night. It's going to be a great show. Us, Hawthorne Heights, As Cities Burn, and Capstan. After that, we head to Cincinnati, and then we do four Canadian shows, London, Montreal, and two Toronto dates. Make sure you go get your tickets. And if you missed out before, we may be coming back to a city near you in the U.S. of A. in January. So check it out. Head over to whenbrokeniseasilyfixed.com. We got VIP, we got general admission, we got everything for your Silverstein ticket buying needs. Also, we got a really cool bonus conversation at the end of this episode after I finish up with Cove. Stick around, I talk to Royals, a brand new band out of Toronto, making some big, big waves. Jade and Sahar talk to me. This is a band you're definitely going to want to know about. All right. Let's get into it. Here is part two of my conversation with Cove, formerly of Seosin.
You're not alone. There is more to this. I know you can make it up. You will live to tell.
Okay, so you're on the road now, and for the first time, you've made a great record. But, you know, part of the reason, or I don't even, maybe the whole reason why they asked you to leave the band was because they said your live performances were slacking, had gotten worse, weren't up to par. Is that the true reason why it all happened? Because, I mean, you're a pretty great singer.
I would say that it's kind of a combination of that, and then my heart really wasn't in it anymore. You know, like if any Theosin fan out there is listening to this, it's like, and
oh,
has
they
seen
are.
Me
They're
play,
listening. And they have, yes.
And if you'd seen me play, you would know that, like, after every show, I would always make it a point to, because when I got into the band, let me just back this up. When I got into the band, one of the things I told myself was I'm not going to be like Ryan Key. And that's no knock on Ryan Key from Yellow Card, but I only got one picture with that guy out of the 20 some odd shows that I had been to. And for me, like, I told myself, like, I want to be accessible,
yeah,
to people, because I want people to understand, like, this is a blessing. What we do as singers and frontmen and touring musicians is a blessing that is bestowed upon us from the people who are showing up. So in order for me to humanize myself, I have to stand outside and talk to fans as they're leaving. And if there were people out back of the show, you know, waiting to get a picture and hoping to see me walk out so they can call my name and hopefully have me come over, I'm going to go over.
Right.
So what happened with Theosin was there was some inner drama that happened while we were finishing up the first record cycle, and it literally killed me, and it killed my confidence as a singer. And I was never really quite able to get that back.
What do you mean? Can you elaborate more on that?
Yeah. So basically, like, we're finishing up the 2.5 years of touring, and we sit down to have a meeting. Not like your typical industry meetings. It's just us in a hotel lobby.
Right.
And, you know, we're shooting shit, talking about, like, what's going to happen when we get home, because this is the last, you know, like, 7 shows that we have. What do we want to do when we get home? You know, we had just toured for 2.5 years. I'm sick and tired of seeing everybody else's faces. I want a little break.
Right.
This, and that. And, you know, it's a little unclear now, just because it's been so freaking long.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, some things were said that just I don't think were necessary at that moment, considering that we had sold, you know, 500,000 records worldwide, and, you know, we had done something that no other band at that time had done, which was tour for almost 2.5 years. You know, we were the exception,
yeah,
to the rule, which, yeah, was, you know, write a record, tour for a year, write a record, tour for a year, write a record, tour for a year. And that's kind of how the industry went at the time,
sure,
that we had put,
sure,
out the first record. So for me, like, I was all hype, man. Like, I couldn't believe we had done something that no other band had done. And we were playing, like, dope shows exiting the first record cycle. And when those things were said, I just, you know, I doubt crept in, and it never really left.
So what, somebody said something like just basically like, well, like, I guess that was cool, but maybe if our singer could actually sing, like, was it something like that? Some kind of snide,
yeah,
remark?
Yeah, pretty much exactly that. And, you know, at that point, you know, I kind of lost like all faith in everything, which is why the second record turned out the way that it did. There wasn't as much hope, you know. I mean, right. The record's called In Search of Solid Ground. Like, tell me, I was searching for anything stable, because everything felt like it was shaky at that time. And even like, you know, when we got back into touring, like I noticed myself not going out and doing the things that I had told myself I was going to do, which was humanize myself to the fans. You know, I hid away and I didn't go out and take photos and sign autographs. And I did when it was like scheduled, but it wasn't like I was actively pursuing like getting out there and like, you know, being me in front of everybody. One of the things that happened after that meeting was, you know, I got mad. We all kind of went our separate ways. Bo, Chris, and I jumped into a taxi, and we went to a show. We were on our way to another show. It was like an off day from this festival tour we were doing.
Okay.
And we were headed out to see, I don't remember who, probably like Killswitch Engage or something like that, that was on the tour. I think it was them. And I just remember like breaking down in the car and jumping out and being like, fuck you guys, you know, for not backing me up and not saying anything, like you not saying anything kind of, you know, hits the nail in a little bit harder. So,
right.
Or a little bit more.
So it sounds like it was Justin. Justin that said, you know, something.
No. No. But we can let people speculate on who said what.
That's
and
fine.
It doesn't really
That's
matter. Fine. It honestly
no,
doesn't really matter.
It doesn't.
But at
no,
the same time, like, I remember after I left the taxi, I didn't know where I was. I made my way back to the hotel to go yell. And I remember getting into the hotel, doing my yelling. On my way out of the hotel, just to go walk around and start making phone calls, because I was like, "Screw this! I'm going home. I don't need to be here. Like, I'm gonna book the next flight home and just bail on this tour if that's how y'all feel."
Right.
And I remember just being in the elevator, crying and looking down. I'm sure somebody from the tour was in that elevator with this girl. They got in the elevator and I was sitting there crying and kind of looking down, trying not to like look at them or anything like that. And the girl goes, "Hey man, do you, you look like you could use a cigarette." And I was like, "You know what? Yeah, I could. I actually could right now." And, she, you know, held out her pack and she offered me one. And I was like, "Can I have two? Cause I've never done this before and I'm sure I'm going to fuck up the first one." she's like, "Yeah, go ahead." And, you know, cigarettes definitely hindered my ability to, perform live and held me back from doing what I was capable of doing.
Really?
And that was,
I know that was
basically the downfall.
I know that was mentioned in the statement that you made and that Justin made and stuff, you know, back when this happened in 2010, you know, when you left the band. But I was surprised because, I mean, there's so many, like, Robert Plant smoked cigarettes. You know what I mean? Like, there's tons of, like, amazing singers that smoked cigarettes. Like, do you really think that was definitely what it was? Or do you think it was just your self-confidence? It was in your head. I mean, You sound pretty fucking great on the Dead American stuff.
Well, thank you. And I think it was probably you know, so Aaron Gillespie, we did a ton of tours with Under Oath, and you know, something that conversations that we had, you know, we talked about performing. And I believe that 90% of it is mental.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, because you already know you can do it. You did it in the studio. You did it the other day. You already know you can do it. It's when you start, when your brain starts telling you you can't, is when you can't.
Yeah. And I think that it became, you know, it was still 90% mental, and my mental at that point was gone.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but the 10% of it that's left is your physical capabilities, you know? And I think about 5% of that 10% that's physical that you need was gone because of smoking yeah. cigarettes. I mean, I don't want to say I lost my high register, but like being able to night in, night out, you know, tour, singing that high and getting off stage and hating the fact that I'm entering a van or a bus where, you know, people think poorly about me really affected my mental.
Yeah.
And my coping mechanism was to sit up front on the late night drives until everybody had gone to sleep, smoking cigarettes with the bus driver. And then, you know, once everybody was asleep, I'd go pass out, and then everybody would wake up before me, get off the bus, and I was the last one to leave the bus always. So I kind of reclused and became and showed more of the introverted side of me than I really than I really did before all of that went down. Yeah, so
absolutely,
you know, I know people, you know, I know Anthony smoked and there's, you know, plenty of, you know, Spencer smoked and there's a bunch of singers that I would smoke with, you know, but my mental was so fucked that like, it didn't matter.
I was more the relationship was broken too, because you could have talked to the guys and been like, hey, we need to take more days off on tour, or can we tune the guitars down a half step? You know what I mean? Can we do something to help me out here? Because ultimately, you know, something happened and you left the band and they didn't get anyone else. You know, they didn't replace you.
No.
Until Anthony came back, which was, you know, a couple years later.
Yeah.
A few years later.
A lot of years later.
Yeah, right? I don't know how many years it was, but it was a while. So, you know, I'd have to have the other guys on the show or ask them about their take on it to know, but clearly there was something broken within their own, you know, circle as well. Right? Or they would have figured it out.
Yeah, you know, I think it goes down, you know, it came back to like, well, to me, it comes back to like, if you don't bring me back or you don't bring Anthony back, change your name. You're not Seosin, because
right.
before me, it was Anthony was Seosin. If you ask any kid who's our age or within our age group, within like the 5 years of us, like, you know, what Seosin, like who, like what record defines Seosin? They're going to say the Beatle record, you know, like that record.
Absolutely. There's no question.
Defined who Seosin and what Seosin was. So to me, like seeing Anthony come back, like that was the best move that they could have done, because I mean, it's as great a voice as Tillian has, like, I mean, that wasn't the demo that they put out was not Seosin to, I think, anybody, you know. That was a solid song. It was a great attempt, but it wasn't going to be the Seosin that everybody knew, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, when Anthony came back, everybody wanted to know what you had to say about it, what you thought about it. And you were very gracious with the whole thing. In fact, you really took the high road through all of this, which I got to give you mad props and respect for. You know, your statement when you left was very, 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 you know, high road, and everything you've ever said has been very complimentary of everything, despite maybe, you know, you weren't always treated the best.
Yeah, I don't really know any other way, you know, like
right.
my this, touring with Seosin and being a part of literally my favorite band of all time, you know, was a blessing that I'm not going to say like, oh, I was the reason that band blew up, you know, like if it, like everybody played a role, you know, if it wasn't for Bo, if it wasn't for Chris, if it wasn't for Alex being able to play the drums as amazing as he does, if it wasn't for Justin being Justin, you know, the band wouldn't have, like, I was nothing without them and they were nothing without me. You know, like,
yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of how I took it. It's like, I'm not going to like degrade everything that I did by like taking the low road and just, you know,
absolutely,
like starting shit. Like, no, man, like I got to do something that very, very few people on this planet get to do, you know, like I got to live my dream. I got to go to 20 plus countries and sing in front of people who don't even speak English, and yet they knew every single word of my songs. Like
that's an amazing feeling.
That's a huge blessing, and it is an amazing feeling. It's something that you know, like nobody really understood getting into it. But once you're there, it's like you can't. I don't know. Like I couldn't like. As much as I probably wanted to at the time, you know, like clap back and just, you know, make it all about the drama. Like, it's not. It wasn't about that. It was about leaving these songs in the hands of the people who loved and appreciated them to the point where, you know, they could always turn back. Like, I didn't want to, like, I felt like if I clap back and was like, you know, no, screw these guys, like they're all, you know, crappy individuals, or, you know, like it just would have ruined those songs that meant so much to so many people, you know, like,
of course,
I still to this day, you know, and even getting into Dead American, like, and doing Dead American now, like I recently, within the past 2 months, I've had people hit me up and being like, I don't know how I can help, but I would love to help you out with Dead American, because You're Not Alone has literally saved my life on numerous occasions. You know, like, I didn't know writing that song that I was going to impact people's lives. I wrote that song for me.
Of course.
I locked myself in my closet at the Oakwoods in LA and wrote that the night before recording it, you know, like
that's amazing. I have the same story. I literally lived in a closet in the Oakwoods in LA when we made our second record. That's so funny.
It's wild, man. Like I never wrote anything with the, and I still don't, like, I don't write these, my lyrics and melodies with the intentions of like, oh, this is going to be the biggest song ever, or, oh, this is, you know, this song's going to mean so much to everybody else because, you know, it's got a powerful hook or a powerful line or whatever, dude. I wrote songs that, you know, were therapeutic to me, because I felt alone, you know, and I had to remind myself, like, I'm not alone in this, you know. I've got a dope family. I've got a fan base out there who's anxiously awaiting hearing something, and I've got people all over this planet who want me to succeed, you know, and I've got four dudes in the band with me who want to succeed as much as I do. So, you know, yeah, it's just I don't know.
I think, dude, this has been a great talk, and I do want to talk about something that, you know, you talk about your fans, and the first thing I said to you when we jumped on the phone here was how many people have been waiting for you to come on this program and talk and tell your story. So I thank you so much for doing that. And they have been waiting for new music from you. And Dead American is here. And this is a great new project that you've put together. Five-song EP is out now. The Shape of Punk is Dumb, which is obviously a bit of a nod to Refused. And I mean, there's a lot of attitude in these songs. You're singing balls out. You're swearing. You're doing a lot of screaming. It's great.
The filter is off, man.
Tell me a little bit about this release and what can we expect coming up. I mean,
so
it's exciting.
It's very exciting. The response so far has been pretty stellar. We actually just today released a show this morning. We're playing with them at the Glass House on December 16th.
Really?
Pretty freaking sweet. Yeah,
sorry,
man.
So Seosin's playing and you're opening?
We're opening. Yeah, we're going to open for Seosin on the 16th of December.
Are they going to have you up and sing a song?
We'll have to see.
Okay.
we'll have to see what goes on there. But with Dead American, though, you know, The Shape of Punk is Dumb, you know, obviously is a play on the Refused Shape of Punk to Come. And I wanted that to be the title, mainly because we released our record on the 5th of October. And the 20th year anniversary of The Shape of Punk to Come was at the end of October.
Okay.
And to me, in the past 20 years, we've seen a pretty dope evolution. But somewhere along the lines, when I dropped off, nothing in the punk world really connected, you know? Like, I think the only record that really hit super hard after me dropping off was Deftones, what was it, Diamond Eyes?
Oh, yeah.
That record. That was, like, the only record that I had heard or that I was shown that to me, like, was dope in the past, I don't know how many years. So,
wow.
You know, for me, like, and I had been to shows where I'm like, man, like, I don't know, man. I don't know if rock and roll is resurging in the way that I feel like it should, you know? Like, we got a freaking Republican as a president of the United States. Like, come on now, where are all the punks?
Right,
like, where is everybody saying stuff? Like, I feel like the new punk is like, unfortunately, is like, you know, is calling out the left on all of like the social justice crap that's like happening, where it's like I don't necessarily feel how all these social justice warriors feel, and I don't necessarily feel how all these I don't want to sound like I'm some Trump supporter or anything like that, but like, I don't feel like emboldened and empowered to like, you know, like a lot of, I don't know. I watched way too many YouTube videos, but there's like, you know, videos of people who are just like got super empowered because we have a president now who just doesn't have a filter.
Right.
But you know, I'm not going to like say that like I'm picking a side or anything like that, but like, I wanted to I haven't connected with anything lately. And so, you know, for me being out of the game so long and kind of falling out of love with heavy music, I wanted, when I heard these songs that Chad, our guitar player, sent me, or that he wrote, I heard all this nostalgia. I had like these nostalgic vibes, and I was like, I have experienced so much shit since I left Seosin, from, you know, sleeping in my car and not having a home to like living with, you know, two dudes whose dad was addicted to meth, and we'd come home and he'd be like, you know, like coming down off of like the drugs that he was doing. And like, you know, I've lived some crazy I've had some crazy experiences since then. Wow. And I wanted to like kind of capture all of that in these five songs. So, you know, this is just all of like the shit that I've had to like deal with since being out of Seosin, you know, like, the songs on the record are, you know, when I sent the demos back, the songs on the record, you know, when Chad and I started like talking a little bit more about, you know, what our sound was going to be, who we are and all that kind of stuff. He goes, "Hey man, I think we're a fuck you band." You know, and I was like,
yeah, I'm hearing that.
I guess we kind of are, you know, like there hasn't been a lot of hope in my life, and I haven't really found a lot of hope in my life up until this point, you know, from the end of Seosin to now. I haven't really seen a lot of hope. You know, we were all promised that with our last president, like hope, and I just didn't see it. Like, I didn't get it, and I still don't get it. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, feel like an answer upon in the game of life, to reference one of our songs, you know.
There you go.
Even Grown So Cold, the second song on the record, like I feel like a lot of people in this world are just tuning out and like
yeah,
just getting over all of the monotonous bullshit that we all have to do just to survive. And like, you know, I'm in California now, and or I'm back in California now, and I'm like, you have to have like, in order just to have a family and live in California, you have to make so much money, and it's almost unrealistic unless you and your wife or girlfriend or whatever, or people you live with, have dope jobs. Like, it's so hard just to even survive. And I feel like for me, that's what I wanted to bring back. Like, I wanted to bring back this level of like real life experiences that I hate, that I've had to deal with, and put it all on a record that sounds nostalgic, like something out of 2004 to, you know, 2003 or two to 2008. I wanted to capture that and make that feel like, because that's the music I loved. That's totally the music that made me who I am. And I feel like a lot of the bands, even that I loved back then, they're not doing the things that made me love them. You know, they're either changing their sound, or they're, you know, they're showing their progression, and it's great, but it's not the same band. You know, like, I wish half the bands that I loved and listened to would have just changed their name, and because it's not, to me, it's not the same band, you know.
No, I get it. I mean, and I think your EP is awesome. I do definitely hear that vibe from that era, but it's also very well recorded. It's a very great modern recording. In fact, I was listening to your EP, and then I put on the Seosin self-titled record, just because I hadn't heard it in a while. Your new EP sounds much better than that record you made with Howard Benson, you know, which is like,
I don't know about that.
It does. I'll tell you, it does. And I'm sure
Thank you.
I'm sure you spent about 100 times more money on it.
Yeah. On those five songs, for sure. I wish we spent 100 times more money on that.
Oh, sounds great to me.
We could have put out a full length with that type of money. But
well, there must be plans for that, though. Are you guys going to do some touring? Are you going to put out a full length? I mean, I know it gets harder, but like you say, making ends meet, living in California and all that. But at the same time, you know, you got to give it a shot, right?
Absolutely. We're definitely going to give it a shot. We got a show coming up with another local hometown hero band, Lower Definition.
Oh, yeah.
We're playing with Lower Definition on the 14th of December. We got a show with Seosin on the 16th of December. And just in the past 2 weeks, we sat down with Dave Shapiro.
Oh, yeah.
Who just left UTA and is starting his own company.
He books my band, so I know him very well.
Well, hopefully we'll be on tour together soon, my brother.
I would love it.
But yeah, so we sat down with him and you know, hopefully he'll, you know, we'll start booking some tours at the end of spring, because all the spring stuff is booked out right now. But yeah, the plan is to tour as much as we can. We have so many demos that are done and are just kind of laying in wait to be recorded for a full length. As much as we'd love to try and attack this as independent artists, you know, I'm not going to say like, we want to be the first independent band to win a Grammy, you know, what's his name? Who just won a Grammy. He was on that Kit Kat commercial. Not Chance the Rapper.
I don't know.
I forget who it was too. You know, I'm not going to say that. Like, we're definitely open to meeting with, you know, managers and labels and having conversations. Just because, you know, I've played the game before. I know how the game is played.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like I was pretty damn good at it. You know, with that first Seosin record, I did everything that was asked of me, and I know that, you know, I stood my ground on some of the things and that I felt really compelled to stand my ground on. But, you know, I knew that out, you know, labels obviously have their best interests in mind, but I know that if they're going to be doing things for us, that, you know, we shouldn't say no. We should, you know, definitely sit back and think about it before we do take a stand. And you know, the goal with this band is to record, you know, as much as we possibly can, because unfortunately I've been out of the game for so long that I feel like I owe it to everybody. You know, like I said in Grown So Cold, leading into like the second bridge, or leading into the end of the song, it's like I took too long, you know. I took too long. I know it. Like it that was my bad. But
from here on out,
yeah.
It's better. It's better than blowing, you know, doing it right away, and you're still hung up on old shit, and you feel resentment, and you're trying to. You got something to prove. Now it's like you're doing it on your own terms, and it's beautiful, and it's the sky's the limit. For Dead American.
Yeah. And I just know, like, even at the end of that song, I say, I'm not going to lie or feed you bullshit. Like, I'm not going to, when I play the game this time around, I'm not going to, like, there's not going to be a filter, you know, I'm not going to, like, hold back and try and, you know, make a hit or change something in my lyrics to, you know, be more accessible to the masses, because, you know, I feel like a lot of what's missing is just brutal honesty. You know, like, if I'm coming back, man, I'm coming back to slaughter. I'm not coming back to, like, I'm not coming back to, like, just be a part of it, you know. Like, absolutely. I'm coming back to take names, and
there you go, man,
and take heads.
Well, so, dude, thank you so much for this. This is gonna have to be two parts. It's the longest conversation I've ever had, and I love you for it, man. So thank you.
I love you for it too, and you're not the first person who's had to do that to me.
Hey, no
problem. You can talk You can talk to Mike Shea over at AP about that. He's like, man, I didn't get to half the questions I wanted to ask for a podcast.
Well, I think we got to everything and more, so I love that.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, though, I want to play a Dead American song for everybody. A lot of people haven't heard this yet, so what do you want them to hear? Give me the tune.
You know, I referenced Grown So Cold a bunch at the end of this interview, so put that one on there. I think that's basically the best representation of what happened.
Okay.
With the exit, and B, where I'm headed with this new band.
Absolutely.
You know, with Dead American, that's the song right there.
Cool. I'm feeling Gravity. Gravity is the jam for me.
Gravity is the jam. That's the one that everybody that we showed before we dropped the record.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, nah, that's the song right there. But I can agree with that. That's a sick song.
I'll play Grown So Cold, and then all the people will check out Gravity. It's number one on your Spotify, so there you go.
Yeah.
Cove, thank you so much, man, for everything. And, I hope to see you around soon. Kill it.
Hell yeah, brother. If you're ever in San Diego or in Southern California, hit me up.
All the time.
I'd be glad to come out. All right.
We'll do, man. All the best.
All right, homie.
Yeah, take care.
Later. Peace.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So there is brand new music from Dead American Cove's new band. That is going to be very cool that they're playing with Seosin. If you're in the Southern California area, definitely do not miss that one at all. I want to thank Cove so much for taking so much time, and I want to wish him all the best with his new project. Speaking of new projects, I got wind of this new band. They're called Royals. They abbreviated RYLS. And they are a very, very new band and a very awesome band out of the Toronto area. I've got Jade and Sahar on the phone right now. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good, you know, coming down with that cold weather flu, sort of kind of hoping to avoid it, though.
Yeah, that's the way we roll in Canada. I know very well. I'm from, you know, I grew up in Oakville area, like, you know, the western suburbs of Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you guys actually based?
I'm based in downtown Toronto. And
yeah. And I'm around Scarborough, like by the Toronto Zoo.
Oh my God, that's so crazy. You know, it's funny that I grew up right there, like I grew up in Oakville, I should say. I already said that. But the first 6 years of my life, I spent in West Hill, Scarborough, right by the zoo. So yeah, way. So
awesome.
I went to Centennial Road Elementary School. I don't know if it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, my sister went to Mowat, I guess.
Was the high school. That's still there for sure.
Yeah, yeah, crazy stuff. Sahar, did you grow up in downtown Toronto?
No, I was born in Montreal, and then I moved here when I was in elementary school, and I actually grew up in Scarborough when I moved to Toronto. But like Markham, like closer to Markham.
Well, right on, yeah. No, I know you guys have known each other since elementary school, you know, and you guys have had kind of this, you know, lifelong journey through adolescence now into your adulthood playing music together. So talk to me about how you and, you know, the other members of the band met, you know, when you guys were kids.
Well, I think it started with music class.
Mm-hmm.
We met each other like at the very, very beginning of like middle school. That's kind of when we first met, and we met in music class, and we would just like, I don't know, we would just play together during lunchtime, early in the morning, after school. We had a bomb ass music teacher who just let us take over whenever he was cool with it, whenever we were being good.
Yeah, and he was actually really cool because he would let us play any song we wanted. He didn't really care. The way he grew up, he said that people forced him to play music, and he just wanted to play like the Beatles and stuff. So he would let us play like Nirvana, Billy Talent songs, Metallica songs.
Right.
He was really cool with it. And yeah, from there we started jamming together, learning guitar together. Our school had like, we'd throw a lot of shows. It was a French school in Toronto, and they'd always invite a bunch of like other schools to come see the shows we would throw on. So we got to play a few of those, and
quite
it was always
a few
pretty
of
fun.
Them. Yeah. It was pretty fun.
Very, very cool. So how old were you at this point?
Around 13? 13, 14.
Yeah. Whatever grade 7 is.
Yes, grade 7. That's amazing. And that's so funny because that's almost my story of my first band, you know, to a T. I had a friend and I had a guitar and he had a guitar, and we didn't know anybody that played drums, and we saw this kid at lunchtime just like jamming on the kit in our music room. Like, you know, we were wandering in the halls. We're like, who is this guy? And we took him in the band, and then we didn't have a bass, so the school had a bass, and we signed it out. So we would sign it out, like other kids were signing out like their trumpets and flutes and stuff to practice, and we were signing out this bass guitar so we could go, you know, jam in my parents' basement.
Which
is funny. And yeah, and I mean, now that guy, the bass player, is the bass player for that band, A Wilhelm Scream. One of the greatest, one of the greatest bass players probably in the scene.
Dude, he's amazing.
Yeah, that drummer,
he's so good.
I know. And that drummer that was drumming was the drummer for The Full Blast, and he was in Boys Night Out and everything. So yeah, it's funny how all this stuff happens, you know, when you're so young, when you have this passion for music.
Dude, it's funny because like before I even bought a guitar, I used to sign out the school guitar to try to learn because I just wanted to do that for so long.
Ditto.
And then, yeah, and then I went to a pawn shop and bought a guitar. But
I know, and we were lucky, you know, I think in the Toronto area that we had a, you know, whatever school board that had a music program like that, because I know there's been some, you know, musicians and stuff that have done charities to, you know, to try to get musical instruments in schools, because it's not, it doesn't happen everywhere. I know it happens a lot of places, but it doesn't happen everywhere. So I consider myself to be pretty lucky.
Yeah, no, our teacher would go on like Kijiji and trying to find like used amps and stuff. It was pretty funny.
Oh, that's amazing.
He's such a crafty guy.
Yeah, he was funny.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about Royals, which you guys have abbreviated RYLS. Any reason for the abbreviation?
Yeah, we abbreviated it mostly because if you Google Royals, you get like the Queen and the Lord song, and we we figured like we want people to find us.
So we were like, well, let's just knock the vowels out.
There you go. Hey, it's worked before. I love it.
Exactly.
So you guys have put out an EP, and you know, you guys are a true independent band. You know, you guys even recorded your EP that's coming out in January. Do you have a date?
January 18th.
January 18th. Cool.
The 18th.
So that's the day it comes out. Everybody check it out. But you guys actually recorded it yourself because it sounds really good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What's the story there?
Our drummer in our band, he actually went to school for audio engineering and stuff. So he kind of knows a lot of that world. And we played in bands with him before, and we'd always just recorded ourselves. So for drums, we just literally went to our bass player's basement. His dad used to collect books. So it literally looks like a library down there, but for some reason, it just makes stuff sound good. It's like really isolated,
right, yeah,
so we tracked the drums there.
Yeah, deadens the sound, I guess.
Yeah, it sounded decent. And then
the guitar and bass were actually recorded at the drummer's place.
Yeah, just in the bedroom using plugins and stuff. We didn't use any real amps on this.
And then my brother actually has like a recording studio in my mom's basement. So we trekked it all the way to Scarborough.
Yeah.
Got real resourceful and recorded vocals over there. And we actually had a friend who's like a proper sound engineer. So he helped us track vocals and harmonies and all that fun stuff.
That's really cool, though. I mean, that's good. You know, you're using your family and your friends to do this stuff. I mean, that's what you got to do, you know, as an independent band without, you know, any help, at least as of yet. And you guys have a video. I'm going to play your single Waves, which is a really, really cool song and a really great video. Talk to me about the video. Have you guys... I know you guys had enlisted some help with the video as well. What was it like, you know, making your, I guess, your first music video?
It was crazy. Yeah. It was so crazy.
Yeah, I think, like, it really felt like once, like, we did get help with it. We had one of our friends from elementary school help us shoot it. So, and I actually ended up doing all the editing, and then he helped me with the color correction and stuff. But yeah, he helped us shoot it. We had a bunch, it was actually, like, that day warmed my heart up because a bunch of our friends just came out and helped us out. We had people helping with makeup. We had people helping with hair. Like Sahar does hair for a living as well. But so she brought a few friends that helped us out with that.
Like our makeup artist was somebody that I worked with. Our hair. Okay. Well, I did the boys' hair. My friend did mine. And then even in like the story part of like the music video with like the actors, they're a couple of my really, really good friends. And they're actually in like the acting and music industry themselves. So it was just like pulling in all the friend strings, you know?
Yeah. It was
No, I love that. I mean, I think that's the way you got to do it. So you guys are an independent band right now. You're going to self-release this EP. And, you know, it's very, very grassroots. I'm going to say almost everybody listening to this right now doesn't know your band. So they're going to be some of the first people, you know, all over the world to discover you. So what's the plan for moving forward? I'm sure you guys have some aspirations. Are you going to try to send this EP around to some labels? Are you going to try to, you know, do a tour? So what are your next steps?
Well, right now, we're going to work through the holidays and kind of see. We've been pushing like our music to like promoters and like trying to contact some local Toronto venues and stuff. We would really like to play like We'd love to have an album release show. We would love to open for some bands and play in some bigger venues in the city as well. It would really be awesome to go on tour as well, like not just...
Yeah, I think our aspiration, like, we want to be a full-time touring band. That's mm-hmm. We all want to do music for a living, so... But nowadays, we figured, like, releasing stuff online and seeing how it reacts, like, that seems to be the way to go, is that you put stuff online and see... And let the people come to you. Like, we obviously have to market yourself and push stuff, but, yeah, it's just we put stuff online and the response seems to be pretty good. Yeah. So we definitely want to see if people are interested in coming out to shows. As for like label and management, yeah, like definitely we want to push this stuff around. I've been trying to like send the song and like a private link to the EP to people to see if anybody's interested. But you know how it is being in a band starting out. It's just,
you know, I do, you know, I definitely do know what it's like to be in a band starting out in the year 2002. That is the difference. I don't know the first thing about being in a band starting out in 2018. So there's a big separation there, which I find, you know, very interesting because, you know, there's things like Spotify and that's so important, you know, the whole streaming thing and social media and music videos and stuff, like all that stuff was not, I mean, pretty much not a part of a band starting out when Silverstein started out, you know. So, are you guys just learning from your peers in this? Because, like, no one's written this book, you know. When I did
the
book had
not.
Been written for, like, 40 years. Things hadn't changed much since the fucking Beatles, you know. So now it's a whole different thing. So is it just about being creative? Is it about seeing what other bands are doing?
I think so. Honestly, me personally, like, I listen to a lot of music industry podcasts and I try to pick up on, like, things people say. So, like, whenever you have guests on, whenever, like, I listen to Jamie Joss's show, I listen, like, whenever they have industry people, I listen to what they say. I try to hit them up. I try to, like, I'm always listening to a podcast and trying to just figure this stuff out. So that's definitely been pretty helpful.
There you go.
As for playlists, like, just submitting to a bunch. Luckily, like, Alt Press put us on their Discover playlist, so that was really cool of them. It's just... We also, one of the things we just recently put out, like, a mashup between a Bring Me the Horizon and Halsey song.
It's
two songs that we like. And, like, the overlap of those two artists is kind of, like, the fans we want to have. So we figured, hey, let's put, like, a little piece of candy to reel people in, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think on, like, on, like, my end, I mean, I've always been, like, a very, like, networking, socializing kind of person. And, like, I've come to realize that a lot of, like, local Toronto artists are kind of breaking out on their own way. And I've spoken with people who are in bands. And, like, I have a friend who is in a band called Ever Elsewhere. And they are not signed. And they played Warped Tour. And, you know, they're self-produced, too. And, like, it seems to be that, like, going the label way isn't entirely, like, the best solution as a band. If you're capable of doing it yourself, that's amazing. And if a label is able to, like... add to it and actually help us out, like, bless. But you know, like, the music industry has really changed between now and, like, even just 10 years ago.
Oh, so even really, just like, 2 years ago. Yeah.
Even just like 2 years ago. Yeah. I know. Like Spotify, Apple Music, even SoundCloud, right?
Right. So, sure.
And honestly, like, one thing I have to say about that, like, I thought about this a lot, and I've noticed that this happens a lot in the hip hop world, and I think our scene could use this, is that bigger artists tend to, like, co-sign younger artists. And I get, like, our scene is a little smaller, there's less to go around, but it's just, like, I mean, even noticing you guys, like, Silverstein as a band, I feel like, apart from writing amazing songs, the reason you've had such a long career is because you always, like, took out newer bands on tours, and you were, like, so you take younger bands out on tour, and then if they return the favor and they blew up somehow, you had a whole new, like, fan base coming in and checking you out, right?
Yeah,
whereas
sure.
Whereas now I find, like, it's so much... I feel like it's a little more difficult to get that co-sign from other bands just because the scene is a bit smaller, so...
And collaborations are always amazing. Like, you know, how they say, like, two heads are better than one, you know? Two bands are also better than one. It's also a good way to kind of, like, get the word out there of, like, somebody who's new in the scene.
Totally. Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I got to say, you mentioned the mashup, the Halsey Bring Me the Horizon mashup. Super interesting idea to do a mashup cover. I don't know if I've ever heard of a band doing that before. I don't know if that's a thing bands are doing, but kudos to you regardless, because it came out really, really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, honestly, I don't think I've seen anyone. I've seen a few people like do some loop stuff online, but I've never really seen a band do it, something like that, which is kind of why we said let's do it. Like, we didn't know how it was going to turn out,
I
honestly.
Love medleys.
Yeah.
I used to watch Glee like it was nobody's business. And
there you go.
I was like,
go.
Yo, guys, let's mash it up.
Yeah. So, honestly, like, even to this day, I don't know how people, like, there seems to be some positive comments, a few, like, negative comments about it. But, yeah, so I don't know how, to this day, if it was a good idea or not. But, hey, we did it, and
it was
fun.
A great idea.
Well, I think it's certainly different. I mean, a lot of bands, you know, independent bands trying to make a bit of a splash will go and they'll do the cover song thing, and I think there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, taking a little bit of a different take on it and branching out a little bit like you guys did with the mashup is I think is a really, really cool idea. Absolutely. I think people are going to really enjoy that.
Thanks so much.
The mashup is kind of like a perfect reflection of like kind of where our music styles come from, because it's like we all have different styles and tastes in music, and like to be able to bring two songs that don't really sound like they would, you know, they would ever end up together, and actually making something dope out of it kind of shows a little bit of what our style's like.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a great way to approach a cover song, you know. Absolutely. Well, Sahar, Jade, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Good luck with your band.
Thank you so much for having us.
I know it's going to be not the easiest battle, but hopefully some people are going to hear this. They're going to check out everything you're doing, adding you on all your social media. Do you want to shout out the social media right now so people can add you as well?
Yeah, sure. So all our social media is This Is Royals. This is an R-Y-L-S. We're everywhere on the internet. If you look that up,
yeah,
we should pop up.
Any platform: Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter.
Yeah,
there you go. And I'll definitely be posting some stuff about you on the Lead Singer Syndrome Instagram as well. So feel free to check out that.
Thank you so much.
Bless. Now I'm gonna play your single Waves. Now, anything you want people to know about the song before they hear it?
Sahar, you want to take this one?
Well, if you're having a bad day and you need a pick me up to repurpose that negative energy, and you need a hype song, this is a song for you.
All right. I love that answer.
Yeah.
Sahar, Jade, thank you so much for this. Here is Royals
Bless.
With the track Waves on Lead Singer Syndrome.
You left me broken, I'm drifting away. The storm that you